Hi, Royals fans. This is J.J. Piccolo. The University of Kansas Health System is the official health care provider of the Kansas City Royals. Get the major league care you deserve at kansashealthsystem.com/royals.
The Border Patrol is presented by Walker Medical Linen Services, locally owned and operated, and HLAC certified, meeting the highest industry standards. Walker has partnerships with hospitals, surgery centers, and medical clinics in and around the metro area. Walker Medical Linen Services in Kansas City and online at walkermls.com.
Welcome back to the Border Patrol on Sports Radio 810 WHB. Thank you so much for joining us. We appreciate it. And right now we have one of the hosts of Keyshawn, J. Will, and Max on ESPN Radio. You can hear it before our show right here on Sports Radio 810 WHB. And I'm talking about Max Kellerman. Max, good morning. How are you?
Morning. Not doing as well as you guys nowadays.
Oh, let me tell you something. We're living a dream. We'll get to that. But before we get all wrapped up in football, I got to get this off my chest. So I used to box a long time ago. I've been involved in boxing pretty much my whole life, and it's my first love as a sport. And I'm sure you hear this all the time, but I miss HBO boxing and you and Jim Lampley as a boxing fan, as just a sports fan, so much. You guys were my favorite broadcast crew of any sport, and especially for boxing fans. It's just, I still love boxing. I still love the sport, but it's not the same anymore. It was taken, I mean, losing your broadcast crew and losing HBO boxing, that coverage of boxing, took so much away from the sport, man. It makes me sad, but I'm glad to talk to you. But I just want to tell you how much I loved and respected your work and Jim Lampley and everyone that did such a great job at HBO boxing for so many years.
That's very nice of you to say. I got to tell you, I feel the same way about the experience, right? Like, there was something different about doing those broadcasts and Jim Lampley and at first Emmanuel Stewart and then Roy Jones and then, you know, Roy and Andre Ward, depending on the show. Like, the three-man booth that they used to run out there were like, you know, and then you show up early and just watch the prelims and you're sitting next to Roy or Emmanuel or Andre soaking up knowledge, you know. Just the experience of doing it was so much fun.
Absolutely. Is there been a fight recently or a fight that could be happening soon that you just, man, I wish I could get the guys back together. I wish we could do this one more time on HBO.
Terrence Crawford, Errol Spence, if it ever happens.
Is that ever going to happen?
You know, I'm afraid that by the time, if it happens, the expiration date will be passed, you know, like Mayweather or Pacquiao. I mean, and Sugar Ray Leonard, Marvin Hagler, you could even argue, happened after it ought to have happened. But there were, you know, you really want to see those super fights happen when both guys are in their primes. And we are already almost to the point where you're like, damn, why couldn't it have happened, you know, earlier, given Crawford's age? But, you know, hopefully that gets put together in the next 12 to 18 months, because after that, I'm afraid it, even if we get it, it's not what it could have been.
I've always thought Bud would win. What do you think?
Yeah, I agree, except Spence is a whole lot because he's got a real good chin. He's real tough, a lot of heart. So you start with that. He has the internal stuff of a real fighter, and we saw that in the Sean Porter fight and others. But he's also a southpaw with a long jab, and he's shown in the Garcia fight he can really box and just beat you on the jab in defense if he needs to. But he also is not only a real good puncher with both hands, head and body, but he sets a high work rate. So Bud is like a guy who studies you and then starts breaking you down. The problem with Spence is, and this is the reason it's such a great fight, other than the fact that right now they're both in their primes, they're both undefeated, they're both boxer punchers, they're both more or less at their right weight, right? Very few times in the history of boxing has that happened. But, you know, the winner would be perceived universally as the best pound-for-pound fighter in the world. It almost never happens like that. But Bud, as he's waiting to break Spence down, Spence is going to be getting rounds in the bank. And Spence ain't pity-pattying. He's also doing damage. So the question with Crawford is, by the time he figures Spence out, you know, does he need to stop him? Because that ain't easy with Errol Spence. You know, or is he already too beaten up, right? I also like Bud in that fight, but I think it is a hell of a fight. and as close to 50-50 as you get.
See, that's everything you described. That's why we want to see it. My favorite fighter is Canelo, and so I'm more than happy to watch him fight every 3, 4, 5 months, and that gets me by. But just for the reasons you said, I want to see Bud and Errol Spence get in the ring. Cross my fingers. Hopefully, boxing fans will finally be rewarded for our patience.
I want to see two fights for Canelo. By the way, I want to see Canelo.
What's that?
Bivol was the worst fight he could take.
Right.
It was a very interesting fight going in, but if I was trying to get Canelo beat, I'd have picked Bivol, right? Canelo has fast hands and he's a great counterpuncher and he's learned to cut off the ring, but he doesn't have very fast feet. And Bivol has quick feet and is very good technically. So the footwork is going to favor Bivol there, right? And that was the key to the fight, I think. But it allowed his boxing skills to, you know, up top to really come out. I'd love to see Canelo against Beterbiev because that fight reminds me a lot of James Tony Vasily Girov. One guy just wants you to come to him so he can counter James Tony Canelo Alvarez. The other guy just wants to come to you so he can fight you. Girov, Beterbiev, right? So that would be a spectacular fight. And, of course, Benavidez and Canelo.
Boom. That's what I want to see. I mean, I'll take both of them, but the Benavidez fight is what I want to see because there's so much animosity. And I do think, while it lasted, that would be a tremendous fight. So I'm with you right there. Those are the two I want to see. I could talk with you for 5 hours about boxing, so we better get to football. And thank you for talking boxing with me. But, you know, I felt like watching that Chiefs-Bengals game, I felt like I was watching a heavyweight fight, and I didn't know who was going to be left standing. But I just want to get your thoughts on this. You know, Patrick Mahomes, what he did, and all the uncertainty around that high ankle sprain, and for him in the fourth quarter when it was all on the line to put it on his legs and get that run that led to the penalty, that led to the field goal. From your perspective, what did you think of that performance in that game and what that does to his legacy?
Well, let's start with this. I thought the Chiefs would win that game. And the reason I thought that was because these are evenly matched teams with two great quarterbacks. It's always going to be close. And one team's not going to beat the other one every time, right? The Bengals got a little lucky, got a few breaks go their way to beat the Chiefs three times. It was time for the ball to bounce Kansas City's way, and that's what happened, right? It was not more complicated than that for me. Now to Mahomes. Mahomes, through the first 5 years as a starter, is clearly and by far the greatest quarterback who ever lived. I'm not saying he's already the GOAT. It's Tom Brady. I'm saying that through the first 5 years as a starter of any quarterback's career, you cannot compare anyone to Patrick Mahomes. You know, Tom Brady wasn't even all-pro, first-team all-pro, a single year the first 5 years he started. Patrick Mahomes about to win his second MVP, right? He is the gold standard. Insofar as there's ever been a Michael Jordan of quarterbacks, he is the best candidate so far, because being the Jordan of something doesn't mean you're the best. Oh, Tom Brady's the Michael Jordan of football. No, it's not what it means. Jordan means you look at the guy play and you go, oh, wait a minute, I've never seen something like that before. Then you look at the numbers and you go, oh, wait a minute, he got better numbers than everybody. Then you look at the team results and you say, oh, wait a minute, he wins more than everybody. That's Patrick Mahomes. He's the closest thing to a football Jordan at quarterback. And clearly and by far the greatest quarterback through the first 5 years as a starter in the history of football, which is why if he retired today before the Super Bowl, he's a first ballot Hall of Famer. Like, he's getting in on the first ballot. He is incredible. And that performance was arguably the greatest of his career because of the circumstances you described.
So let's carry the boxing analogy on a little further too, Max, because one of the things that you pointed out was, and one of the frustrating things about boxing is that we don't get to see the matchups that we want to see every time, right? We sometimes have to wait till, well, I think you used the phrase, the expiration date maybe has already passed before we get to see the fight because of so many different political reasons. In this one, We got to see the fight we wanted to see, which was Chiefs versus Bengals in the AFC Championship game, and then we get to see the two number one seeds in the Super Bowl. And I'm curious for you, when you talk legacy, Jordan had the flu game that kind of took him to a different level because we already knew he was a great player and a great competitor, but now he's doing it hurt, right? Or he's doing it less than 100%.
Yep.
What does the ankle game of Patrick Mahomes due to that legacy that you're talking
this
about right
now?
This
is what it is. You identified something really important. This is how I would put it. When Muhammad Ali was in his prime, he was the goodest heavyweight who ever lived. Right? He was, at that time, right? Yeah. Guys have gotten bigger and bigger and bigger, but at the time, that was the goodest heavyweight who ever lived. He was gooder than everybody ever, right? But we didn't know greatest heavyweight who ever lived, because greatness is not just your quality technically or your, it's your ability to overcome obstacles. That's how we understand the world as human beings, through storytelling. And stories are only as interesting as their characters. And we need to be invested in the characters. We need to know what makes them tick, what they're after, what's at stake, what is the obstacle in the way. And the bigger the obstacle, the more you find out about their character. And so, you know, Ali, when he came back and he was slower and not as good as he once was, showed that he was in fact the greatest, which he'd been saying all along. He overcame Joe Frazier and the greatest left hooker ever, hit him with the perfect left hook in the 15th round of the greatest fight ever, and he climbs off the deck and finishes the fight on his feet, even though he loses a decision. He overcame George Foreman. He was the biggest and baddest who ever lived, right? He showed you his greatness. We already know how good Mahomes is, but that's another level of greatness when you show that stuff. Then, look, he was the most spectacular in an obvious way. Not necessarily the best player, but the most spectacular player in the Super Bowl he lost. Running from his life behind a no offensive line, making spectacular attempt after spectacular attempt. But that's not the same thing as this. This is different. He's clearly physically hobbled. And with the game on the line, did what he had to do. And that's, you know, a level of greatness. And every layer you peel back of Mahomes reveals more great stuff.
And now, hopefully, we're going to see some more in this matchup against Philadelphia because, as Nate said, it's the two number one seeds. If Mahomes is the MVP, which he should be, then Hurts is the runner-up. You've got the Kelce brothers matchup, Andy Reid against his old team. I mean, the storylines don't end. This truly is, even if you're not a fan of either team, a fantastic matchup on paper and seemingly – you know, Patrick Mahomes, the best player, nothing to take away from the Chiefs, but against the best roster, the best team.
Yeah.
What stands out to you about this matchup?
That Mahomes is going to have to be crazy great to win this game. The Chiefs should have opened as underdogs. The Eagles, since the preseason, you know, in the AFC, it looked like the Bills had the best roster. In the NFC, it looked like the Eagles had the best roster. But so right, even from the offseason, you could see that. And then the way Jalen Hurts developed as a quarterback. By week two, he's seeing the middle of the field really for the first time in his career at that level. They went out and got him A.J. Brown. That helped a lot, you know, in terms of by week two, he figured everything out. The you know, both sides of the offensive line, they're the best or second best in the NFL. And as much as the league changes, it's still up front, right? That affects everything else. Every level of the defense, every level of the offense, they are really, when Hurts is playing, they're a one-loss team. There are very few one-loss teams in the history of football. And they're waxing teams in the playoffs. Like, if they go on to win the Super Bowl by a couple scores, we're going to look back and say, this is it, maybe not the 85 Bears, but, like, this is one of those standout Super Bowl teams. Like, all-time great. So Mahomes got – like, Chiefs got an excellent roster. I get it. But you guys have your work cut out for you because the Eagles are the best team in football, I think, by a bit when healthy. Mahomes is going to have to be extra special to win this game, but we know that he's capable of it.
So your gut tells you Philadelphia is going to win this matchup?
I'm picking Philly, yeah. And I might even pick them by more than one score. They've just been destroying teams. But again, there are two things. One, several things. Andy Reid's a great coach, one of the all-time greats. Spagnuolo, as a defensive coordinator, I can tell you, is a Giants fan, and I think Romo touched on this during the last broadcast. He's one thing in the regular season. As the regular season wears on, his defenses get better, and in the playoffs, he's quite good. And you can see that happening right now. And then, you know, you have Patrick Mahomes. You have the highest level we've ever seen a quarterback play in his prime. So, you know, you always have that shot. But listen, this is why I mentioned Muhammad Ali before. That's, you have to slay the monster to be Muhammad Ali, like to be that next level guy. One of the criticisms of Michael Jordan is, well, who'd he ever beat? Jordan was so dominant that there was never a team in his way that you thought really could beat him, right, once he had his all-star squad with him. He can't get a LeBron against Golden State moment because he is Golden State and LeBron. Well, Mahomes has the chance now. Mahomes is that guy going up against an enormous obstacle against whom he will be the underdog when this game opens. And so he's got to do that magic thing he does, but he is capable of doing it.
Max, thank you so much for the time. I hope we can talk to you again soon.
Thanks, guys.
That was Max Kellerman from ESPN. Very good stuff.
You doing all right there?
Sure I am.
Boy, between all that boxing talk and Patrick Mahomes, you started breathing kind of heavy. The glass partition between us started fogging up over there, so I didn't know if you were a little hot and bothered.
You know, I'm glad that, and again, I'm the one that preaches, you know, who cares what national pundits say, who cares, you know, like, I had somebody send me a tweet the other day that so-and-so on ESPN's not giving the Chiefs any credit, saying the officials helped them win. Like, I'm like, I'm sorry, but I don't care. I just don't care because the Chiefs won. The Chiefs won. That's all you got to do to shut people up. It's you win. The Chiefs shut everybody up. All the people like, oh, they're not going to beat the Bengals. Oh, they're, you know, now but Tyreek Hill, Patrick Mahomes can't be the same without Tyreek Hill. They can't win with all these rookies in the secondary. They did, and they shut everyone up. And so all the people that picked against them or spent so much time telling you why they can't do this and why they can't do that, oh, you think Mahomes can win on one leg? You're crazy. And there's people everywhere were saying that. Oh, there's no way. He's too compromised. No way he can play well enough for the Chiefs to beat the Bengals. How many times? The Chiefs can't even beat the Bengals, and Mahomes has two good legs. So now,
you don't like that color.
I don't like that color.
You got people like that are searching for any reason to discredit the Chiefs and to make themselves look better because they were wrong. Instead of saying, hey, you know what? I was wrong. The Chiefs are better than the Bengals. They won the game, and that's it. Congrats to the Chiefs. No. So your Doug Gottliebs of the world and other, you know, are just going to continue to try to discredit the Chiefs or say it was the officials or it was this, it was that. And I just love, well, if Cincinnati only had the offensive line at full strength, okay then. Oh, if Patrick Mahomes is only at full strength. Oh, if the Chiefs only had the full complement of wide receivers. Oh, if the Chiefs had LeJarius Sneed for the whole game. Oh, if they had Willie Gay for the whole game. We could do that song and dance all day long. Great. The Chiefs won a close game between two fantastic football teams, but the Chiefs won. And so now you're searching for ways to explain why you were wrong. Just, yeah, you were wrong. That's it.
Well,
that's okay. We're all of us are wrong sometimes. But if you picked the Chiefs to win, you weren't wrong. You were right. You were right.
The idea that you're ever going to win enough to shut everybody up is a myth because, if anything, the more you win, the more people line up to try to discredit what you've done.
But I just like what he had to say about Mahomes and what this meant and how impressive it was that he did go out there, you know, a week after a high ankle sprain when most players and most quarterbacks would not have played and certainly would not have been able to throw for 326 yards against the Bengals defense and two touchdowns and no picks and run for the first down that ultimately led to the penalty that led to the game that put them in field goal territory. I mean, wait, look, for most quarterbacks, that's a career day. Hey, this guy threw for 326 yards in the conference championship game and led his team to the Super Bowl. For Mahomes, it was just what he could muster on one leg. It was still pretty good. It wasn't Mahomes-esque. But then when you're watching it, then after they think, ooh, he threw for 326 and two touchdowns?
Yeah.
That's spectacular. He just wasn't out there dragging ass and not making plays. He threw for 326.
Well, that's And there are people like Max, and it's great. Max was an awesome guest, just an awesome guest. And his perspective, tying it into Muhammad Ali and guys like that that have shown the ability to overcome obstacles, like he said. There are people out there that are acknowledging the greatness of Patrick Mahomes. I'm not a huge fan of him, but even Colin Cowherd did a great rant about how Mahomes is like nothing we've ever seen before. And to the point now where, look, he's got to play for long enough to become the GOAT like Tom Brady. But this five-year stretch, Tom Brady never played at this level for a five-year stretch. And what Tom Brady did was win a bunch of championships over a long period of time, and that's why he is the GOAT. To be clear, he is the GOAT. But it's not crazy to look at Mahomes and say, there's never been anybody like this. There's never been anybody like this. And he just keeps stacking up these heroic performances with the odds against him. And Tom Brady never did the kind of things that Mahomes been asked to do with defenses like Mahomes. Now, this is what's cool is that the defense actually stepped up and was just as responsible for this win as the offense was. But I think it's funny we have to start coming up with new modifiers for what it will take for Patrick Mahomes to win. And the line from Max that I wrote down, he said, you know, he's had to be great to do what he's done already. He's going to have to be crazy great to win this game against the Eagles.
And so guess what?
Still another level.
He might be.
Hey, would you rule out his ability to be crazy great?
He might be. All right. By the way, quick reminder before we break. Today is a very special day because 3 years ago today in Miami, I sat inside Hard Rock Stadium and watched the Chiefs win the Super Bowl. So, happy anniversary, Chiefs fans. Happy anniversary, boo. Happy anniversary, baby. Yeah.
It was quite a day, wasn't it?
Yay, yay. Oh, about 7:26 a.m. on that day, Steven was in a world of pain and hurt.
I remember getting a call.
Yeah, that took the life out of me. Oh, you remember getting a call? I don't remember making a call, so we're even.
You didn't make the call, but a friend of ours made a call on your behalf and then put you on the phone with me.
Who did? Was it Josh? Was it Grunhardt?
No, it was our buddy from Il Lazzarone.
Josh.
Yeah, Josh. Yeah, yeah.
How do you go, was it Josh? No, it was
yes, we Josh. Said Grunny. I could, yeah.
Was it, No, it was, hey, look. Happy three-year anniversary. One of the best days of our sporting lives. Man. We'll be back after this with Adam Kaplan on Sports Radio 810 WHB. Welcome back to the Border Patrol on Sports Radio 810 WHB. It's Thursday, February 2nd, 2023. Stephen St. John, Nate Bucati, Marco Marquez, now joined by our NFL insider, Adam Kaplan. Hello, Adam. How are you?
Guys, I'm well. I cannot believe we have this matchup. It's almost hard to believe, but it is true. It is happening next weekend.
You know why it's happening? Because you come on the show every week. You willed this to happen.
Yes. You know, it's funny. I remember when I said, I hope I'm wrong about the Bengals winning. You know, I kind of secretly wanted the Chiefs to win because it would be, and obviously the Eagles to win, it would be just a great matchup. Obviously, the connections between both franchises is just ridiculous. It's for people to understand, I don't know if we've talked about this over the years, how many people left with Andy Reid, not just from the football standpoint, but from marketing. Mark Donovan, the president, obviously worked for the Eagles, and so many people have relationships with both football teams. It's pretty interesting. And then obviously you have what's going to be on the field, which is going to be great.
I'm curious to hear from you about Nick Sirianni a little bit more because, again, he was with right before Andy Reid got here. He was with the Chiefs. He started in 2009 as an offensive quality control coach. In 2010, assistant quarterbacks coach. Then he became offensive quality control coach and then wide receivers coach in 2012 before moving on to the Chargers, the Colts, and then ultimately the Eagles. When did he become a guy that was looked upon as a future head coach. And tell me a little bit more just about him, because I don't know that he gets enough credit for what the Eagles have done, because they've been described as the best roster, and you talk about all the talent that they have. But yeah, tell me more about, you know, how he, the path that led him here, and what type of coach he is.
Yeah, you know, it's really interesting about the situation with Sirianni and Andy Reid. So Andy decided not to retain Sirianni, and Nick moved on. But what's fascinating about the situation with Sirianni is, and Andy Reid would be included in this, three out of the last four Eagles head coaches never had another interview. Andy Reid never had another interview other than the Eagles in 1999. In fact, the Packers, because Andy, by the way, was actually a position coach. He had never been a coordinator. So you got to give Joe Banner credit, who's the former president, and also Jeffrey Lurie, the owner. Joe's talked about it many times. He was just blown away by Andy's presentation. And I give them credit. I'm not sure how they knew that he'd be such a great coach. But he was hired. He never had another interview. Doug Peterson, the only team to interview Doug Peterson, the Eagles. The only team to interview Nick Sirianni, the Eagles. So there's something in common here, and obviously it's offense. But the energy, the passion for the job, they just saw something in these guys. And Nick, look, and also Nick was a non-play-calling offense coordinator for the Colts. And I think if the Eagles were being honest, Nick was not their top choice. They were looking at other people. Arthur Smith, the Falcons, had a real – who is now with the Falcons, who was formerly the Titans offense coordinator. He had a real good shot to get that Eagles job, but – the Eagles wanted to wait and talk to other coaches. And Doug was not even close to the Eagles' top choice. It's just kind of how it went down. Some guys were unavailable. Certain dominoes happen. It's kind of funny how things work out. The guy that you didn't quite have the top going in turns out to be your top guy, and also, by the way, a great choice.
Okay, so let's rewind back to last week. Like you said, you picked the Bengals, but I know you wanted the Chiefs to win. You wanted this Andy Reid.
Oh, badly,
bowl.
Yeah. That's right. I wanted the hype. You know, I get there Monday night. I want the hype. I want it to be great. It's just great. I'm just all these subplots is just, and of course, remember Andy was let go by the Eagles. So obviously, there's a lot going on here.
Right, and so you know, covering that game, it was so like physical, but like inside the stadium. There was this intensity that it was even greater than most playoff games I've been to. And then in the locker room, it had looked like these guys had all been through a fight. And, it's, you know, Mahomes coming off the field and watching these guys walk up the tunnel, they had been through it. And it was right to the brink. And either team could have won that game in the final couple of minutes, but the Chiefs did, led by Mahomes and with that high ankle sprain. Can you tell me from your perspective how impressed you were with Mahomes, the effort and performance he had, and then just the Chiefs overall finally overcoming the Cincinnati hurdle?
Yeah, let's start with Mahomes. His performance was incredible, considering, again, I don't think it's your typical 6 to 8 week high ankle sprain. It's probably a mild one. But nevertheless, that's at least a 4 week rehab. And for him to not miss any time, and remember, he took all the reps, all the starters reps last Wednesday, Thursday, and Friday, so that was pretty impressive. Now, I would say in the second half, you clearly could see he was struggling a little bit. To try to push off that right leg was not easy, but his performance was great. And the interesting thing about it, you know, as you said, any team could have won it late. The Chiefs never trailed in the game, though. That's the one thing. Though it was a relatively low-scoring game. I don't think the weather was a factor. I know it was cold there. It was just the defense has really brought it. And also what you saw there is, when you look at it, it's one of these situations where both teams were, as you said, were very, very physical. But what happened was, and we knew this was going to be a factor at some point, and it was, Chris Jones was unbelievable. He's been on such a roll. The issues the Bengals had in their offensive line, the three changes, it really came to the forefront. That was certainly an issue when they lost Tyler Boyd, their slot receiver, who got hurt early. I thought that was a problem. And then, obviously, another reason why it was not high-scoring, when the Chiefs are down to two receivers to end the game, I mean, that's going to be a problem. Now, hopefully, the bye will get all these guys over there and be able to play. But I think injuries also played a part.
Yeah, no doubt about it. On both sides, there were some significant injuries. That's now, as we get ready for this Eagles game, we just spoke with Max Kellerman moments ago, and he said, as great as Patrick Mahomes has been, if he wants to win this game against the Eagles, he's going to have to be crazy great, because that's how good this Eagles team is. Is there a different level that Patrick Mahomes needs to get to, even in this game, than we've seen before, for the Chiefs to beat this Eagles team?
Well, what's interesting is, because of Andy Reid, Joe Banner, who's former president, both teams, and the Eagles still do this, so Joe's been long gone, they believe in passing game, and although the Eagles' run game is way better. When the Eagles decide they want to run the football, they go at it really hard. They're the NFL's best offensive line. But if you talk to both coaching staffs, they'll tell you they want to throw the football. So both teams have pass attempts well into the 40s. Mahomes had 43 last week. The game that was not obviously high scoring, but we know the Chiefs' run game. That's not what it's about. It's about their passing game, shot plays. MVS showed up in a big way. I was pretty happy with that. It's good to see that because he's got a big contract. They got to take a look at that money for 23. But if let's say everybody's available, or mostly everybody's available, it's going to be about the passing game. You're going to have to score. But is there another level that Mahomes will have to go to? It's going to be kind of like, speaking of the Eagles and the Patriots Super Bowl, the highest yardage game in NFL history, nearly 1,200 yards. It could be a knockdown, drag-out fight. It could be that you've got to, it could be the last team standing, and you got to throw the ball, and you got to score, and you can't bog down in the red zone. The Eagles' offense last week, look, that we didn't really get to that game, but just briefly, their offense, though they scored 31 points, they had less than 300 yards of total offense. That's typically not going to get it done. It won't get it done against the Chiefs. I just see it. We'll talk more about this next Thursday, but I see this as a throw fest, and weather will not be a factor, obviously, which is a key here because at this time of year, you're always worried about that. But since it won't be in Phoenix, it's going to be about the passing game.
Who has, in your opinion, the better chance to wreck this football game, Hassan Reddick or Chris Jones?
Both. Now, Jones, mostly from an interior standpoint. Reddick, Eagles run a different front. They run an odd front. It's really a 34 with two overhangs. So you'll see sometimes they'll actually play three defensive tackles at the same time and two pass rushers standing up. And obviously Spags is running his 43 front. It's just kind of different, to be honest with you. It's a situation, I think, if you look at the issue with the Eagles, their starting unit is really good. Their starting five is terrific. But where I don't know if you guys are really aware of this, Lane Johnson at the right tackle is playing with a torn adductor tendon. He has to have it repaired after the Super Bowl. What he's done since he had that injury is just unbelievable. He took 2 weeks off, and he's still playing at an elite level. Now, what the Niners did last week is they line up Nick Bosa over him, and he was really not that much of a factor because of Hurts. And we're going to talk more about this next week. But what teams are doing here, they're not really rushing off field as much. They're trying to hem in Hurts from beating them with the run game. They run a lot of RPOs. And that's the thing. The Chiefs have to play with tremendous discipline because the Eagles, off of those RPOs, that's how their pass game runs.
Yeah, that's going to be – I mean, we've been talking about that a little bit, this defensive front. And I wonder, does an extra week – I've seen a lot of people say, look, you can't really prepare for the Eagles' offense in 1 week if it's something because of that RPO stuff that you maybe don't see as much with other teams. Does an extra week help the Chiefs get ready for that unique type of offense? If so, how much?
Yeah, well, what you do is you kind of know what they do. They don't really change. They run it off RPOs, there's no doubt. No, Hurts has improved greatly as a passer. Outstanding deep accuracy. You know, now speaking of injuries, he's got this moderate sprained shoulder, which he keeps getting dinged. He keeps getting hit on it. Now, you'll see over the last two games, coming back from the injury, what he's doing is he's trying to avoid it. Every once in a while, you'll see him dive instead of taking the extra yardage. So the Chiefs know this from watching the tape, that he's trying to protect himself and also run out of bounds. But they're going to have to get to him, and they have to make it. See, the thing is, their line is so elite for protection. They're giving him a lot of time to throw the football. Now, what the Niners did is they didn't shut down the Eagles' run game. It's hard to do that, but they sort of controlled it. But the problem is when Purdy got hurt and then Josh Johnson got hurt, the Eagles kept getting the ball in plus territory, and there's nothing the Niners could do. So what they've got to do is they've got to get to Hurts, and they got to rush him. When he rushes, the ball doesn't go where he wants it, and that's going to be the key for the defense. Just make him get rid of it before he wants to.
Do you think the Chiefs will be able to put that kind of pressure on Hurts?
Yeah, I think now his numbers against the blitz are actually very good for a young quarterback. But what I think will happen is we've seen this: Chris Jones will line up at end. Sometimes he's primarily inside, but you'll see him line up at end. I think that what you do is then the Chiefs are good at this. They run stunts. The Eagles are a big stunning team lately. They're very effective with it, running stunts. And not that anything – Jason Kelce's unbelievable. He's going to be a Hall of Famer. That's obviously another subplot, the brothers going against each other. But the stunts are where you try to get the Eagles a little bit, where Isaac Seumalo is a good player. He's one of the starting guards. He's going to be a free agent after the season, and they drafted Cam Jurgens, who replaced Kelce, but if Kelce's back next season, Jurgens will probably start for Seumalo. That's probably, if you look at the five, not their best player, but he's still solid. And let them sort that out. You'll see stunts by both teams in this game for sure.
So we saw, especially after L'Jarius Sneed went out, we saw these rookies thrust into such a big moment in the AFC Championship game between Jalen Watson and Trent McDuffie and Joshua Williams and Brian Cook, all these rookies out in the secondary against a lethal offense like Cincinnati. Now they have, and we think L'Jarius Sneed will be back, but now they have a different matchup, because I'm going to tell you, A.J. Brown and Devontae Smith, they're both incredible, and then you factor in Dallas Goedert. How do you compare the skill position weapons for Philadelphia to what the Chiefs faced against Cincinnati?
It's a little different. So Hayden Hurst is an athletic tight end, but he's not as physical as Goddard. He's not as good a blocker. Goddard's a better player, but Hurst is pretty athletic. And then you look at T. Higgins, who's terrific, and obviously Chase is terrific. Now they're different. And now you could say, look, they're sort of like A.J. Brown. A.J. Brown's had a great season, best season of his career, because he's in a passing offense. But nobody has anyone like Devontae Smith. He's unbelievable. He's so unique, guys. He's like 165, 168 is all he weighs. But the way he contorts his body, he's just a special football player. And you've got the NFL's best offensive line and a very underrated running game, by the way. It's kind of interesting. Miles Sanders is on the final year's rookie deal. He didn't score a touchdown last year. This year he finished with double digits in the regular season. And Kenny Gainwell, for those of you who follow college football, he's out of Memphis. He's done great the last couple games. He's sort of had a breakout. We're in a breakout period for him. He had been kind of a disappointment up to lately, but he's been coming on. And Boston Scott, all he does is score touchdowns against the Giants. It's very strange, as we've talked about on your show. So they don't really have a weakness in offense. The way that I think you could maybe beat the Eagles a little bit is screens, getting the running backs involved, getting McKinnon involved. They have not done particularly well when teams have run screens against their linebackers. They haven't done great. They've kind of revamped their linebacker group. Kaiser White comes over from the Chargers. T.J. Edwards is a guy who's an undrafted free agent in 2019 who's been a sort of a breakout player for them. And by the way, N'Kobe Dean cannot even get on the field, their third-round pick out of Georgia, because their inside linebackers have done so well.
So, Adam, one of the things that I've seen a lot of people talk about is that the Chiefs have had to play against all these quarterbacks and teams in the AFC that seem like they're ready for Super Bowl-type, you know, performances. So they're more battle-tested, because the Eagles just haven't had to play anybody like that yet, at least not for quite some time. Do you think there's any stock in that? Do you put any stock in that?
First of all, Mahomes is so different from any quarterback, Eagles or any team I've seen. You're talking about preparing for Hurts. This is really hard to prepare for Mahomes, because the off-schedule throws, off-platform, it's really, really difficult. The Eagles, by the way, have struggled at times against big receivers like MVS. He can run. Slay, over the years, he's, by the way, also really, really good. Their two starting corners are veterans, and James Bradbury's revived his career after being cut by the Giants. MVS is a guy to keep an eye on in this game, and obviously Kelce going against their safety group. Those are great matchups. And then Tony, by the way, Tony, they know, obviously, if he's able to play. Now he's got another injury, by the way, the hamstring again, which is always a problem. I'm interested to see, because the Eagles, here's one area you're going to see. We haven't talked about this. The Eagles are they're very thin on outside corner. Knowing Andy Reid and the way that they run that offense, expect the Chiefs to spread them out a little bit, because they are not – in fact, their third outside corner is always a struggle. I'd expect a lot of what we call 11 personnel in this game. I don't think there's – and probably some 10 as well with four receivers.
Hey, before we let you go, we'll get your official prediction next week, but we've seen this line fluctuate quite a bit. If you were in charge of Las Vegas and they told you set the line for this Super Bowl, what would you set the line at?
Now, we'll talk more about injury. We need to see who's going to be available. I'm more concerned about the Chiefs receiver group, just about how and not having Justin Watson last week as a shot play player. I thought that also hurt them. I would probably install the Eagles as a 1-point favorite. It's funny you'd say that because I typically do this for playoff games, what my personal line would be, because it's on a neutral field. Both teams will travel well with their fans. I expect it to be pretty even. It's just you said this at the top here. The Eagles have slightly a better roster, particularly at certain defensive positions. This, I mean, I can't – look, we got kind of cheated in the Niner game because Brock Purdy got hurt. I just – and I wish Mahomes' injury – obviously getting an extra week to prepare with that ankle will help him. But I wish Mahomes and the ankle happened to be 100% because this should be sort of a throw fest like the Eagles' last Super Bowl against the Patriots.
All right. We will look forward to next week when we get the final breakdown and your official prediction. Adam, thank you for the time. We'll talk to you next week when you're in Arizona.
All right, guys. Thank you.
That's Adam Kaplan. Follow him on Twitter. Kaplan NFL is his handle. We'll be right back after this with Gary Lezak on WHB. Welcome back to the Border Patrol on Sports Radio 810 WHB. He's calling in live from Gobbler's Knob. No, I'm not talking about Nate Bucchetti.
Oh, I wish I was at Gobbler's Knob right now.
That was your nickname back at KU, I think, when you were in that frat.
One of many nicknames.
Well, Gobbler's Knob over here.
This is Frankie Yankovic and the Pennsylvania Polka right here.
How about Gary Yankovic, Gary Lezak, live from Gobbler's Knob, where he's with Punxsutawney Phil. Gary, what happened with that damn groundhog?
Well, you know, it's the 137th time we've had Groundhog Day, and Punxsutawney Phil in Pennsylvania, I don't care what they say, okay? I know one thing for certain. Since television cameras have been recording it, they have all these lights that come on, and they all shine on Punxsutawney Phil when he comes out so you can see if he sees a shadow or not.
Right.
Which means there is always a shadow because there's always these lights on, and so these camera lights are on, which means he sees a shadow every single year, which means there's always 6 more weeks of winter, which just happens to be the case. 6 weeks from today is the first day of spring. There's always 6 weeks more of winter.
6 more weeks of winter. We also had Punxsutawney Nate go out on the balcony earlier.
Yep.
No,
Nate saw his shadow. 6 Did more he? Weeks of soccer. So it's unbelievable that he's declared that, and we'll go ahead and discuss that later.
6 more weeks of soccer.
Can you believe
All
it?
Right. No, I can't believe that. Do we have video evidence?
Well, you can hear this music in the background, and that's the music they're playing in the movie.
It seems like you don't like that groundhog from the way you're talking.
Yeah, it's like
I love the groundhog.
No.
I do love the groundhog.
You're trying to discredit the groundhog because you think it's a threat to your LRC.
Well, I'm not worried about that.
Well, a lot of people find him to be very accurate, so I don't know.
He is just like that Farmer's Almanac, you know. It's just it's incredible how inaccurate both the groundhog and Farmer's Almanac is. So,
did you see your shadow this morning?
I did.
What's that mean?
It means 6 more weeks of weather.
Oh. It's gonna happen. All right.
Oh, I give you 6 more weeks of weather. And in 2 weeks from today, we might have a parade, or 2 weeks from yesterday, maybe. I don't know when it would be, but oh my.
Are you going to run out into the middle of the street and try to hug another chief safety?
Yeah. Someone sent me a picture I'd never seen before when the honey badger was heading towards me. We were both smiling, looking into the camera, and we were still 3 feet away from the embrace. But it was a really neat little picture I got. I'll have to post that thing. But I hope so. That would be great. I mean, although I'm not going to be in the middle of everything because, you know, they might consider me dangerous since I don't work for that TV station.
Something tells me you'll be in the middle of everything, Gary.
All right. Well, let's hope so. We got Super Bowl weather in Arizona. There's one storm that's going to cross there early next week with a chance of some rain showers and cool weather out in Arizona. But then it should move by. For Kansas City, that storm will be approaching us late next week. around February 8th, 9th, 10th, one of our target periods is a chance of a storm here. So we'll see about that before the Super Bowl. But then Super Bowl Sunday looks pretty good right now here in Kansas City, and we'll have to monitor that. There is an ice storm warning over Texas. Dallas, Texas, has been getting significant ice. So there's a significant ice storm to our south. It is one of the storms that I had that would be near Kansas City. And instead of near Kansas City, it's due south of here. So we have the colder air. But it's going to be a pretty good day today. Another cold front's going to come through, and it's going to warm up to around 45 to 50 degrees. That's not bad. Yeah,
I'll take that.
Not bad at all. Yeah, and then tomorrow a little bit colder in the 30s. So next week we'll watch for that storm. We've only had a few inches of snow the whole winter. I want snow. And I also want a Super Bowl championship. Are we going to get it?
Yes, I hope the championship. Yes, I hope snow. No, I hope you don't get that. So sorry.
If the snow has to be part of it, will you accept that?
Man, give me a blizzard then.
Okay, there you go. I'll work on that one for tomorrow. Have a good day, guys.
Thank you. You heard it. Gary sees his shadow, which means 6 more weeks of martinis on Sports Radio 810 WHB.